We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We've got an awful lot to talk about coming out of week one, and we have the perfect guest here. Peter King joins us on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Peter, thank you for joining us on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. 49ers drop one. Not a lot of people expected them to drop. I don't even know where to start other than the fact that they need help at wide receiver, and there are a couple names that are sort of floating around today. Let's start with the fact that they lose to Arizona before we get into rumors. What'd you think was part and parcel of the Niners dropping week one?
You know, I don't know any team in the NFL that was as snake bit at any position coming into this year as San Francisco was at wide receiver. And I think that there's a reason why you go out and you try to get all this weaponry, why, you know, last year they went out and spent early, you know, in the draft, obviously, on Deebo Samuel. And then this year they go out and spend early again on Brandon Ayuk. And when neither of them is available to you after basically having plans, you know, you knew since June that there was a good chance you'd be without Deebo. But, you know, you had no idea really about Ayuk, you know, obviously until recently. And those two things, you can't just say necessarily next man up will be fine. There's a reason why you drafted those guys, and there's a reason why you spent a lot of, you know, a lot of time, energy, draft capital in getting them, and you're not going to be as good if you don't have them. But I think the other part of this really is that, you know, the Arizona Cardinals are catching up to this division. That is a really good team. That was not a stunner of stunners, really, to me. I mean, I think Washington beating Philadelphia was a lot more surprising. Now, it's a surprise, and it hurts the 49ers without any question. And look, now I think what has to happen is that Jimmy Garoppolo's got to raise his level of play, pure and simple, because there are going to be some injury concerns now. And, you know, there's a reason why you made the trade for him and you paid him all that money. He's got to play better than he played on Sunday.
When this all gets boiled down, we'll get a better view of everybody. But what was your takeaway from Sunday's game? Was it that the 49ers have sort of a lower floor than we thought, or that the Cardinals' ceiling is higher?
The Cardinals are better than anybody thought. And that offensive attack, you know, I remember, I'm trying to remember who it was, but I was going over the league with the general manager a couple of weeks ago, and this guy loved two teams. He loved who nobody else really liked. He loved the Raiders and he loved the Cardinals. And he just said, there is just so much talent on both of those teams. And when he talked about the Cardinals, he basically was talking about, you know, everybody will talk about DeAndre Hopkins, but he said, what's really going to make that offense go is Kenyon Drake. And no one realizes that Cliff Kingsbury, nobody thinks about Cliff Kingsbury wanting, demanding a great running game. you know, and everywhere he's been, it hasn't just been fill the air with footballs. It's the running game too. And so I think that they have put themselves in position, you know, to contend for a playoff spot without any question. And so that isn't the surprising thing. But Ray, I just think, you know, the San Francisco 49ers, every team in this division, when you look at the first weekend, you know, can you really be sure that the 49ers this year will go 2-0 against the Rams? No, you can't. Obviously, they're not going to go 2-0 against the Cardinals, and I doubt they'll go 2-0 against the Seahawks either. So, I mean, they have a gigantic challenge ahead of them. And that's why, you know, the people who they're paying a lot of money to have got to, especially now, you know, will Kittle miss a week or two? You don't know. But this is a huge, huge challenge now for this team, and I think especially for Garoppolo.
All right, so let's go back to the wide receiver issue then. We all agree the wide receiver talent is not where they need it to be. We know Debo's out for at least the next 2 weeks. We've heard rumors about Allen Robinson and Odell Beckham, and obviously Mohamed Sanu is just sitting out there. What do you think of the Niners' interest in and ability to acquire any of those guys?
I mean, I doubt sincerely they're going to be able to get Odell. The money is just too big. You know, the reason, really, the primary reason they got rid of DeForest Buckner was not that they didn't love DeForest Buckner. It's that they had that you can only pay a certain number of guys. And, you know, you have to think at some point soon you'll pay Deebo Samuel, you would think. So, I mean, you can't bring up. I mean, look, I will be very surprised if they bring in Beckham. And, you know, the other thing about Beckham is, you know, be careful what you wish for. I mean, if the Browns were to trade Odell Beckham, it would be at least, regardless of what they said, it would be at least in part because he's disruptive. The Giants traded him because he was disruptive. And again, so, you know, if I were them, I think Allen Robinson makes some sense. And, you know, if you want to go the budget way, then Mohamed Sanu makes sense. But I love Allen Robinson. To me, if Allen Robinson truly is on the market, and if I were the Niners, I'd go after him, and I'd go after him hard.
Peter King, NBC Sports. You talk about the money spent on the talent that the Niners have. They put a lot of draft capital and then paid Dee Ford. They invested draft capital, obviously, in Eric Armstead. They rewarded him with a contract. Those guys were essentially invisible. There is an awful lot of Kyler Murray responsible for that, but I was really surprised to see a dominant defensive line really turn out very little against Arizona.
Right. I was too, especially because Arizona's line is not great. but I think so much of that, you know, it's one thing, you know, I was watching the Giants-Steelers game last night, and I was just thinking that, you know, what a different job a defensive front has when they face a guy like Roethlisberger. Now you're talking about Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray is so quick and so difficult to game plan for because he can disappear from you in the blink of an eye. Whereas if you're rushing a guy like, let's say, Breeze or Roethlisberger or Brady or something like that, you know that guy is not going to be able to be very mobile, and you can, I hate to use the cliche, pin your ears back and just go to a spot in the pocket, but you can. And that's what's different about Kyler Murray. Now, they'll be facing a more traditional guy in Sam Darnold, and then staying back east after that, a guy who has got some legs in Daniel Jones, but I think they'll have a lot better chance against Sam Darnold this week. And look, the Jets offensive line is an absolutely average C-minus line. So if the 49ers do not have a very resurgent day along the defensive front, I'll be worried for the Niners. In the Meadowlands on Sunday, I'd be very worried for the Niners.
Toward that end, how bad are the Jets? Are the Jets so bad that the 49ers don't have to show the incremental? Okay, well then it leads to my question then. How much better do the 49ers have to get to sort of control that game? And the reason why I ask is, how critical then is it to get everything straightened out for next week, or can they ease into it a bit?
Yeah, I don't, you know, that. And again, nothing is easy in the NFL, especially coming off a game like the Niners just played. There's a lot of things you need to get fixed, a lot. So I wouldn't take it easy or anything like that. I would definitely, you know, if I were the Niners, this would be an extremely important game. Not only to win, you know, I would expect them to win even if they didn't play very well. But the reason why I think it's a really important game is that at some point soon, you've got to be able to say, hey, listen, this is who we are. We're really good. We have a standard. I remember last year talking to Drew Brees, you know, in training camp, you know, back when you could go to training camp and sit down with people. And one of the things he said to me was, he said, too many people look for the result and they don't worry about the process as much. And what I tell young quarterbacks when I talk to them is, forget about the scoreboard. Don't worry about the scoreboard. Don't worry about the score of the game. You just have to do everything at a very, very high level. And what you don't do at a high level, that's what you practice the most. That's what I think faces the Niners this week. You know, forget who you're playing. It doesn't matter that the Jets might be the worst team in football. You have to make sure for yourselves that you are ready to play a great game, whether you're playing the Kansas City Chiefs or the New York Jets. The opposition doesn't matter. So to me, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm treating this game like the Super Bowl. This is a gigantic game for the 49ers.
So you said earlier Garoppolo has to raise his level of play. And I think we all pretty much agree on that. And as we've talked to people, it seems to me the way he can best do that is fixing accuracy issues and maybe being a little more on time, essentially. But these are the same problems we've seen, even as he's been pretty good over the last year plus.
Yeah.
How confident are you that he can fix those issues? And if he does not over the course of the season, could this be his last year as a Niner?
I doubt it. You know, I'd have to look at his contract right now to see what the ramifications would be to get rid of him after this.
They're
year,
minimal.
But
they're very minimal.
Very, very little.
Yeah, then, you know, who knows then. But, look, the one thing you know about John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan is that, and look, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is not playing right now like, let's say, Mitchell Trubisky did last year. Okay, so I think we need to kind of keep most of this. We have to keep this in perspective. And then you also have to ask yourself, what are my alternatives at quarterback? You know, what can I do at quarterback? Now, the 49ers, if you look at them, they are not the kind of team I've never thought that the Niners are the kind of team that will essentially say if one guy is playing well, we'll keep him in there because you know we don't trust anything else. You know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan will do what it takes for this team to be great, but I would be very surprised if they're even close to thinking about that yet about Garoppolo. I just think that, you know, right now, one of the reasons why you draft two receivers high the last 2 years is because receivers have to win in this league. Receivers have to get separation. You saw what happened in New England last year down the stretch when they had zero, when they could get zero separation with any of their receivers. Tom Brady looked like he was 42. And, you know, and look, as much as everybody in New England now is so excited about Cam Newton, he won that game with his legs, not with his arms on Sunday. So, you know, do you think Bill Belichick wants his quarterback to run 15 times? No, he doesn't. But right now you got to do what you got to do. And so to me, I think what the Niners have to do, especially if Kittle is either, you know, playing at 80% or doesn't play at all, this is a game where if I'm the 49ers, you know, where you're looking at your running backs and you're basically saying, guys, you know, we're doing a heavy dose of you guys this week, and we just have to try to gut this out and win it any way we can.
Got to beat the Jets. Style points may or may not matter. Go look good. Double dipping on the East Coast. That's what the Niners got in their next two games. Peter King here on 95.7 The Game. One last point from me on the Niners. Let's at least bring up the one guy who absolutely had a day. Trent Williams, no rust there. That guy looks like he's ready to make a Pro Bowl after four quarters.
Trent Williams, to me, I mean, that what he showed on Sunday is that you don't have to worry about him at all after all the time he missed. And what I thought was really strong, and again, look, you watch, I watched like six or seven highlights of him somewhere, and I saw him bury two guys and also was quick, you know, protecting the edge. So, look, this is a guy who is going to give you exactly what you paid for, and this is going to go down as one of John Lynch's greatest trades because he really didn't have to give up very much for him.
Does he lose style points, though, because it was against Washington, which was in the kind of monumental disarray that you usually find in, well, teams in college? I mean, the hot mess in the nation's capital was such that deliberately irritate a guy as good as Williams for more than a year, and that the credit that Lynch gets is for just walking around and going, you know what? I'll be a nice guy, I'll schmooze a little bit, and they'll give me a great tackle at pennies on the dollar.
Well, but here was the thing. Remember what was going on at the time. You never, ever can make a great trade if everybody knows that you've got to trade a guy. And everybody in the NFL knew that Trent Williams was not going back and playing for Washington anymore. So, I don't know. This falls in the category of I get what you're saying. Washington is, you know, not, you know, the paragon of, you know, a front office or ownership. I get it. But, you know, again, they probably helped put themselves in that position by waiting for so long to do this deal. What I've always thought you should do in a case like this, you know, because Lynch, whatever, traded like a 3 and a 5 or whatever it was for him, I've always thought that, let's say a week out from the draft, okay, you know, if you are Washington, you call the 3 or 4 teams that have been sniffing around Trent Williams, and you say a week before the draft, listen, we are going to make this trade, let's say by Tuesday, you know, the Tuesday before the draft. Give us your best offer. We'll engage whoever gives us the best offer, and we're going to do it. And I think what happened is that the you know, Washington got to the point by waiting until the morning of day three of the draft that they just ended up painting themselves into a corner. Instead of basically saying, listen, we have to get a 2 for this guy, being realistic. We have to get a 2 for this guy, and if you're not going to do it, then don't even talk to us. And then you have to be willing to basically stick by your guns. My feeling is I would have taken a two if I were Washington this year or next year. And if they played the ultimatum game, I think they would have been able to get one.
Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, I'm going to jump off of the Niners page for a second, although it does relate because we've talked a lot about their struggles with running quarterbacks. And as an NFL fan, one of the things I'm most excited to see this year is what does Tua have at the NFL level. Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't exactly cover himself in glory on Sunday. How close are we to Tua taking the field?
I think two more bad performances by Fitzpatrick in close proximity, they'd play Tua if they felt Tua was healthy enough. I had also heard from down in Miami that it wasn't only his hip. It was that they felt like he wasn't fully ready without being able to play very much in the preseason. I really think they would have liked to have seen him play four or five series in the preseason just to see what he was like in this offense. And don't forget, I mean, Chan Gailey is a classic old NFL offense guy, and I'm not saying that this is an impossible offense to get, but Ryan Fitzpatrick has played in that offense before. So, I don't know. My thought is it won't be long, but I don't think it's one game away either.
Peter, last night on Monday Night Football, Vic Fangio gave a how not to play the end of a game with your timeouts as the clock was just running down and Gostkowski was out there, you know, looking to maybe miss a fifth kick of the evening. Of course he was due to come through in that moment. Look, I don't mean to be ageist in any way, shape, or form, but it feels like some guys are not head coaches, and then other guys may have missed their window by about a decade. And that's what it feels like with Vic Fangio.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know what Fangio said today, or you may know what Fangio said today. It was very interesting. Fangio said that he was too caught up in thinking about what he was going to do defensively, you know, both right then and in the future. You know, what was working for him defensively. So, in other words, he wasn't paying enough attention to that. He was paying too much attention to that, and he wasn't really thinking about his timeouts. And that, to me, says something very, very simple. You need to have on your staff, you know, Vic Fangio has waited to be a head coach for a long time. I doubt he's going to give up, running the defense and all that. But you need to have somebody who you trust up in the coach's box to be saying into your headset, coach, got to use a timeout here. Somebody who you trust. There's got to be that person who, if you're not doing it, somebody is backstopping you. I would be very surprised if Vic Fangio today, I'm literally today, if he wasn't doing something about that. He's too smart. Vic Fangio is a very bright guy, and he's too smart to risk this happening again.
Well, just to follow that up, it would seem like if you've got an offensive coordinator like Pat Shurmur, who's been a head coach, maybe he's better suited not only do that job, but also be like an assistant head coach for moments just like that.
It could be, Ray, but if you've got a guy who's calling your offense, he's calling your offense, and you don't know if, for instance, there might be a time where he's sitting over on the on the bench having an extended conversation with Drew Locke about the next series. That's why I don't think Pat Shurmur's the guy. I think it has to be a guy. Like, for instance, the Tennessee Titans. Mike Vrabel uses his administrative assistant, a guy who came in with him when he got the head coaching job. He's just a young guy, maybe 30 years old. And he uses him as his clock guy, okay? And so he's upstairs in the booth, and he'll call down and he'll say, got to use a timeout here. You got to use a timeout here or whatever. Hey, remember, next series, You got to go fast. We need the time, blah, blah, blah. So you need somebody who can devote time, energy, and headspace to this, who's not worried about one half of your team.
I don't want to start any issues, Peter, because you know we love you, but you picked Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to win the conference. How worried are you about just Brady specifically in that offense after the week one performance?
The only thing that really worried me was his throw that Janoris Jenkins ran back for a pick six the other day. Look, here, you know, let me sum up the overarching thing that I would say. All right, it's like I wrote in my column yesterday. Let's keep one thing in perspective. All right, 1 month ago today, Tom Brady huddled for the first time with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense, and they were given the assignment by the league office of going to play the team with the most continuity over the last 10 or 15 years in all of football, and that is the New Orleans Saints. In New Orleans, quite possibly the one seed in the NFC this year, and their first, the Bucs' first game, you know, with no preseason games, with very little scrimmaging as a team, your first assignment is to go on the road and face Drew Brees and Sean Payton and those guys. And again, look, that sounds like very much I'm making an excuse. And you're right, Tom Brady didn't play well. And a couple more performances like that, I'll be legitimately worried. I think the reason why I'm not as worried right now is that I know what Tom Brady is. I've talked to people who worked with him this offseason, and I believe he's got plenty enough arm, okay? I just think that it's difficult to come into a brand-new team with a brand-new scheme with brand-new receivers and to be really good on day one. And so I still think the Bucs are going to be really good. I think they're going to be 10 or 11 win good. So I'm not begging for mercy on my NFC pick at all.
You still have plenty of time to be right, that's for sure. Wrapping up, who, though, between the Jets, the Browns, the Bengals, and the Lions, who played more to their on-brand reputation with that week one loss?
Browns. I think, you know, last year the Browns had this incredible optimism. They were sort of America's new team, and they came out the first game of the season at home and lost by 30. And this year, they're sort of America's sneaky team that everybody said, hey, listen, you know, Myles Garrett's back. Mayfield's got a quarterback whisper. It's going to be okay. They're going to be a lot better. And they lose by 32, and it's totally embarrassing, and it could have been worse. And now, obviously, Odell Beckham's unhappy. You got guys unhappy. It's just, you know, to me, I'm so sick of the Browns. I really am. I mean, you know, at some point, everybody there has just got to shut up, and they've got to win games. There's no team in the NFL. No team, N-O-T-E-A-M, in week two that is a bigger game than the Browns have on Thursday night. If somehow, some way, the Bengals come into Cleveland and win that game, I mean, it's a total, absolute, abject disgrace. Now, there were some other bad performances in week one, like, you know, Matt Patricia now. You know, the Lions fired Jim Caldwell for going 9-7. So Matt Patricia's 9-23-1. What do you get for that? I don't know, but it's not going to be good unless they start winning pretty soon. But I think those are the two teams that exit week one, in my opinion, in the most trouble.
The always rational, never overreactionary, Peter King, it was great to have you. Thanks for talking us through week one. We look forward to next Tuesday already. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, fellas. Take care.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.